This week's Torah Away has been sponsored by Le'il Nishmas Rav Zev Ben Rav Dov, Zichrono Livracha, Dr. W. Littlestone, on his first Yahrzeit. Kof Vov Sivan, Tuesday the 4th of June, Rabbi Danny Kirsch, take it with a pinch of salt.
Good morning, everyone. You know, this week's parsha, of course, have the famous interaction between Klal Yisrael and Korach, but there are ramifications of that for us Kohanim, which continue to this very day. The Pesukim which introduce us to the Matnos Kohanah, the 24 gifts which the Kohanim are given, begin with telling us, Vaydaber Hashem el Aaron, Kodesh Baruch Hu speaks to Aaron, and he says, I'm giving to you the Mishmeres Tremosai, the special promises that Bnei Yisrael have an obligation to give you and to your children, l'chayk olam, forever and ever. And we have a klal, prat to klal, Rashi points out that the introduction to the 24 Matnas Kohanah introduced with a promise that this will remain with you, l'chayk olam. The Pesukim then enumerate what they are, and the final Pasuk tells us as follows. The final Pasuk of this description. Kol trumas hakadoshim asher yarimu bnei Yisrael, each one of those trumas which Klal Yisrael have an obligation to give, l'Hashem, nosati l'cho l'vonecho v'limnosecho itcho l'choy kelom. And then we reiterated the fact that Aaron's family will be recipients of these 24 matnas kunah. And the Torah tells us again the language l'choy kelom as it uses to describe in the introduction to these 24. But then it says something very unusual. Beris melach olam. That this commitment, this promise for these 24 gifts to be given to the Kohanim will be a covenant of salt forever. And the question I want to look at is, why is it that we're so interested in salt? The Torah tells us in its introduction to these verses that this is going to be a chayk olam. And in fact, that language is repeated in the last posuk. In the other part of the klal, we're told it's the chayk olam. Yet the Torah adds the words, Beris Melech Olam. It's going to be a commitment. It's going to be a bris of salt. Now, if we know something's going to be L'chayk Olam, it's going to be there forever, what additions are going to be gained by the concept being told it's connected to salt? It's fascinating because actually if you do a little bit of a purview of the Torah, you'll see the various languages are used to describe things lasting an awful long time. You know, everything seems to have its sell-by date when you go into the shops. But the Torah uses various words to describe something which is going to last a long time. So famously, with regards to Noach, the Pasuk tells us, Vayome Elokim Zois Ois HaBris. This is the Ois of the Bris, which I give between you and Klal Yisrael, L'Dayrois Olam. And there the language is used to describe the Bris, is Klal Yisrael, the world is told that this is going to be L'Dayrois Olam. And of course, the famous symbol, the famous sign of the keshes of the rainbow will be between me and you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises forever and ever, I'm not going to bring another flood. But there, the language which is used is the Doros Olam. Interesting enough, when we have a look in Shemos, where Shabbos is introduced, we're told, Beini uvein b'nei Yisrael, Oishi le'olam. That now Shabbos is an Oisi. It's not a Chayk Le'olam, it's not a Bris Melech. But what is it? It's an Oisi Le'olam. And in the previous Pasuk, we're told that B'nai Yisrael HaShabbos, La'asos HaShabbos, L'deira Sam, for all generations, Bris Olam, as a covenant. A different language being used there to describe something which is going to last for an awful long time. We see with regards to Korbanos an interesting language. Now we find ourselves in Perek Beis of Vayikra. And the Pasuk tells us, V'kol korban minchoscha b'melech timloch, as we know, every sacrifice which was brought in the Beis HaMikdash, every sacrifice had to be salted. V'lo tashbis melech, and there's a particular obligation to make sure you don't miss out any salt. B'ris elokecha, al kol korban chotakriv melech. And there we're told, this is a bris, this is a covenant between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's a bris elokecha. Which means every single time you bring a sacrifice, and today, every time we have salt on our table, when we have our guests, there's a bris. What's the bris? The bris is done by salt. And there the language bris is used to describe the obligation to bring salt on every single korban at all times. We see, interesting enough, when it comes to the lechem haponim, there the pasuk tells us, in Perek Chavdalad Pasuk Ches, Bayom HaShabbos B'yom HaShabbos, and then it tells us, Meis B'nei Yisrael, that when you bring the lechem upon him, it should be a bris olam. That means there should be a continuous obligation to keep the covenant and the commitment between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do I know that I should continuously bring this Tomid Me'eis B'nei Yisrael as a bris olam? Also an interesting additional language which is brought there. We see in Parshas Pinchas, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to make it very clear to Klal Yisrael the obligations and the gift which is given to Pinchas as a result of his fighting on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And there the pasuk tells us, "Va'yisalei lezara acharav beris kahunas olam." Kahuna stays with the family of Pinchas as a bris kahunas olam, but you'll be very hard pressed. If you go for the whole of Tanakh to find the Loshon, Beris Melech Olam. What is the addition that the Torah is telling us about Beris Melech Olam? In fact, just a couple of additions if you go into Tanakh. Famously in Divrei HaYomim, where there's an attempt to undermine David HaMelech's leader of Klal Yisrael as the king, there the Pasuk tells us in Divrei HaYomim base, you have to know, Ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nosam Lamlocha LeDavid Al Yisrael, LeOilam. David HaMelech is given, only from Shevet Yehuda, David HaMelech is given the obligation to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, the king forever, Loi, him, Ulevonov, and his children, Beris Melech, a covenant of salt. And there, even though the language Bris Melech is used, but it's slightly different from our Pasuk, because in our Pasuk, the Torah tells us that it has to be a Bris Melech, but it's a Bris Melech Le'olam. Therefore, you see that there's lots of different ways to describing lots of things lasting an awful long time. Bris, Chayk Le'olam, Melech is used, but that unique combination which we find in our Pasuk, that combination of being told that these unique mitzvahs are going to remain as a bris melech olam is something which we really find in our parsha. Interesting enough, and I can't tell you, I've been through every single posuk, but as far as I saw in the Mephoshim bring down, the loshen of bris olam is actually brought 16 times in Chumash, and the only time it says the loshen bris melech olam is in our Sedra. So the question we have to understand and try and investigate a little bit is, what is unique and what's special to what happened here where this combination of the words are used? It's clear that as Kohanim will be the recipients of the 24 gifts of Kohanim forever. It's clear to this very day we are beneficiaries. Even to this very day, just recently did a pidgin aben, Baruch Hashem, the gifts still occur. But why is it this combination of language which is found? Rav Shimshon Frul Hirsch, actually in Vayikra, talks about what are the properties of salt. What are the unique qualities that you find in salt, which you don't find in anything else? And he points out, and he brings a posuk from Eov, and Eov tells us, Hayechol tofel mibli melech, is food going to be eaten without salt? Salt's a very nice seasoning. I remember once hearing in the families of one of the briskers, I don't know if it's true or not, but they say that Reb David Soloveitchik's wife says that if the chicken needs salting, then I didn't salt it properly when I was kashering it. But we always add a little bit of salt for flavor. Salt is added always for tasting. We see in Pesukim in Tanakh elsewhere, I saw in Posuk and Shoftim, there they told us, we're told that there's another side of salt, which is if Chalila, there's salt in the field, then nothing grows. So on the one hand, you've got the sense that salt adds a flavor, but then there's the other side that if you have salt in the field, that actually, unfortunately, nothing is going to grow. And we see this in a very interesting Posuk in Tehillim, The Pasuk in Tehillim tells us in Kapitel Kuvzayin, in Kapitel 107, the Pasuk there is describing Eretz. The Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will Yosem Naharis the Midbar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take those beautiful flowing rivers and they'll be turned into Midbar. And Pasukim continue and says, the Eretz Pri, something which at one time be having fruit, will turn into Limlecha, will turn into a salty air. Describing the dramatic changes. Before Shem speak about this is referring to Sodom. Sodom, which was the Gan, which has a beautiful garden where everything grows in it, was turned around and became a salty place. And there David HaMelech is using either a description of his own life or a description of history to describe how something which was once beautiful can turn into something very negative. And what's the description of something very negative? Something which was once full of fruit turning into something which is now very salty. Because we understand and we appreciate that within salt, things can't grow. So on the one hand, the idea of salt is it adds flavor. But on the other hand, salt can turn something which is a fruitful land into something which is a salty waste and nothing's going to grow. Says Rav Shimshon Frohl Hirsch, salt has, as a preservative, the extraordinary power to hold something in time. Something which is very well salted. You have your pickles, which had their cell death by dates as cucumbers, and suddenly you put them in a brine, and it just goes on and on and on, and the cell by date just goes further and further. You have meat, which would have gone rotted, but as a result of it being salted, it's able to maintain for a long time. I remember as a historian, I was always fascinated to know how it was that they found scrolls in the Dead Sea, which were over 2,000 years old, and able to read them. The answer is the humidity and the salt atmosphere in which they found themselves in enabled these things to last for an extraordinary long time, And Shimshon Hirsch there, in Vayikra, uses the language of salt to explain it is an extraordinary preservative. And it's able to keep something going and going and going in a way that nothing else can. And in fact, we can see that in a Rashi which is brought on our Pasuk. When Rashi is talking here about the Bris Melech, Rashi says, "Kabris hakrusel melech." Why is the language of Bris Melech used? Like the covenant which was cut for salt, she'enu masriach la'olam, that it never spoils, it never goes off. However, we still haven't answered the question why that's different from chaykelam. Why is that different from chaykelam? Why is the combination, or the doris alam for generation, why is the aspect of salt being added here to describe something which isn't going to go off at all? Interesting enough, the first Rashi on Pasuk Yud Tes makes reference to this klal uprato klal, which I brought to your attention at the beginning. Kol promas hakadoshim, says Rashi, Mechivoso shel parsha zu, because this parsha is so precious. I don't know how often Rashi uses this language to introduce himself to a klal prato klal. As something unique and special about this parsha in Korach, which is so precious, klala b'tchila, it makes a general introductionary and tells us about all the gifts. And then there's a klala b'sof, the pasuk which I mentioned with the loshen of the Bris Melech, which is the last pasuk. And then, uprat ve'emser, it mentions all the details in the middle. So you've got your klal, you've got your prat and your klal. And for some reason, Rashi tells us that there's something very special that's happening here. Something unique, something which adds a uniqueness where the Torah needs to tell us this klal pratu klal. What is exactly that is so choviv ta'kodesh bochu, what is so precious ta'kodesh bochu that he needs to put this in the klal prato klal? So there are many different approaches to this, but one of them is as follows. We've just had the attack of Korach, and Korach is trying to argue his way through that he and the 250, they really have the leadership and they should be taking over. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as if to say, feels it's so important to redress the balance, and so important to make it clear that only those rightful Kohanim, only those unique people who are part of the family of Aaron HaKohen and part of the family of the Levit, only they are going to have the Matnas Kohanah. And therefore, this is put in a klal prato klal in this environment to teach us that. More than that, the Mefarshim explain that the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the relationship between the Kohanim are also being strengthened here between this klal prato klal. Meaning that as a result of Klal Yisrael reminding themselves that they've got to support totally the Kohanim, that the Kohanim's life is to be dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Kohanim's life is to be that Dugma Ishit, the example to everybody of what Kedusha is about, and the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that everybody has got to take a responsibility to fully support all those people who are dedicating their lives to Kedusha. And therefore, someone to explain, I saw in a sefer called Be'er Yitzchok, that the chavivos, the speciality of this klal, the parashat klal, and why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it so important to everybody, is to remind them of the obligation the Kohanim have to dedicate themselves fully, and Klal Yisrael have a responsibility to appreciate this. But there's another idea which I saw from also from Shimshon Ful Hirsch, which gives us an interesting insight into Loshen of Klal Umprat. He points out that there are three different divisions of the Matnas Kahuna. The 10 of the Matnas, of the 24 Matnas Kahuna, are only able to be eaten by the Kohanim in the area of the Mikdash in the Azara. 4 of the Matnas Kahuna are to be eaten in the area of Yerushalayim, and the 10 of the Matnas Kahuna are to be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. So it's based on a Tosefta in Gemara Chonin. So let's give a few examples of what we're talking about. And with these examples, we'll go to a different understanding of what this idea of relationship between Klal and Prat is. So for example, the 10 areas of the Matnas Kahuna which have to be eaten in the Mikdash are obviously things like Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur. The Kehillah comes and they bring their Shlomim, and as we know, the percentage of the Shlomim go to the Mizbeach, go to the Onan, go to the Kohen. That has to be consumed within the Mikdash. The Shtei Alechem, Shavuos, the Lechem Aponim, regular, Minchas Oima, Pesach, different korbanos have to be eaten in different places. Then those which are eaten in Yerushalayim, amongst them is the Bikurim. What about those things which can be eaten outside Yerushalayim by the Kohanim? Well, there's the Truma, there's the Challah which is bought, the Pidgin Aben. Those sort of things can be consumed by the Kohanim anywhere that they find themselves in. Says Rav Shimshon Ful Hirsch, a fascinating insight. If you look at what it is that the community have to give to the Kohanim, what their obligations, it takes them through every aspect of the year. It takes them every aspect of their communal life, and it also takes them through every aspect of their personal life as well. Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur. We're coming together as a kehillah. We're coming together as a klal, as a community, to bring Shalmei Tzibur. The Shtei Alechem. Klal Yisrael come up to Yerushalayim at different times of the year. The Minchas Ha'omer, to bring different korbanos. There's a community aspect of Klal Yisrael joining together in Yerushalayim and giving over their gifts to the Beis HaMikdash and giving over their gifts to the Kohanim. Bikurim, from all corners, between the Shavuos and Sukkos and even Hanukkah, people keep on coming with their Bikurim. There's an interaction between Jews throughout Eretz Yisrael, wherever they may come from, bringing their Bikurim. Could be from the far north, there we are, Tiberias, they could be from Beersheba, from wherever, Jews are coming to descend and communicate, and who are they going to meet when they come as a collective and as family groups now? They'll come to see the Kohen. And then the Kohen's going to find them in your very personal life as well. Each Friday your wife's going to take some challah, or she'll probably take it on a daily basis, and she's got to go looking around and trying to find herself a friendly individual Kohen. Which means not as a community, but the individual is going to be forced by circumstances to search out his individual Kohen and interact with him. Pidgin Aben. Not everybody's zoche to have a Pidgin Aben. You have a child, a firstborn. That means unique family situations will obligate that person. You're a farmer. You have to give over your children. Says Rav Shimshon Ful Hirsch, there's a fascinating idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants each one of us to interact with those Mesharshei Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to interact with those people whose life is dedicated to Kedusha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to realize and recognize that they are what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're forced in Klal, and we're forced Beprat, to be recognizing and interacting with these people. You know, I heard Baldashin speak recently, and he stood up and he said, I was Zeicher many years ago, the Ponovitcherov came and stayed in my home. And he says, and I've been thinking throughout my life, what it is that I had the schus, that I was able to learn Torah, and then eventually become a person who's teaching Torah. And I put it down to the fact that when I was a young child, I met the Ponovitcherov. And the Ponovitcherov's example, and the Ponovitcherov's image, always stayed in my mind. There was a Yid who had the opportunity to have a closeness to Kedusha. And those of us have had the schus to be close to Gedolim, who understand what it was, what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, to see, feel, emes de Kedusha. I remember many years ago going to see Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, to go and ask him a personal question. These were in the days where it was possible to have a relatively easy connection with the Gedolei Ador. He said to me, I'm just going to Mincha at the Kaiser. If you want, you can come with me. Could you imagine that sort of thing happening today? So the two of us sat in the back of a taxi on Hapiska, and off we drove to the Kaiser together. This event happened more than 30 years ago. And I can picture in my mind's eye, sitting next to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, talking to that God Lador. Says, and Shimshon Paul Hirsch, there's a klal and there's a prat, that the person's got to experience Kedusha in every aspect of their life. And there's a speciality of having the opportunity to bring Truma and speak to the Kohen and talk to the Kohen, to give your challah, to come to Yerushalayim and to connect. And with that energy and with that power, be inspired by the experience. There's more still. Because Rashi tells us something fascinating. He says, Rashi, there's a unique quality about salt and the relationship with the Kohen in which come about with the salt. Not only is it the inspiration that you want to preserve that experience and that connection, not only is it the flavoring that salt gives to my relationship and the connections with the Kohen, but the Bris Melech Olam, says Rashi, is Kares Bris in Aram. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a Bris with Aaron. Bedova Habari, with something which is healthy. Not only is it healthy, but it doesn't spoil, it doesn't go off. Umiskayim, and it's long-lasting, Umavriya Esachem, and it's able also to make others healthy. It's a very interesting quality about salt. Salt itself doesn't go off. And not only does it go off, and it remains fresh, but actually if you take from the salt, and you put it onto another product, then that product also remains preserved and looked after. Something which naturally should go off, something which naturally should lose its flavor, as a result of being in connection with salt, will be preserved and last a long time. And in fact, they explain that what people have to realize is that it's not just that you are giving your matnas kahuna to the Kohen, but as a result of giving the matnas kahuna to the Kohen, there's going to be an extraordinary blessing which will remain and preserve on that which you have left. The salt not only is powerful in itself, but it actually preserves. And there's a Gemara in Kesubos, a well-known Gemara, which tells us that Melech Mammon Chosa. The Gemara tells us that the salt of money is lacking. What's meant by that? Or there's another Gesubos, it's Chesed. What the Gemara is referring to is as follows. If you want to preserve your money, you want to salt your money, as if to say, chosa, give some of it away. If you want to preserve your money, chesed, do chesed. Meaning, by virtue of Klal Yisrael giving from one of the 24 matnas kahuna to the Kohen, that will preserve all that they've got left. There's an extraordinary bracha which is given. That salt represents not only the fact that the Kohen themselves have this power which will last forever, but they're doing you a favor. They're preserving everything else that you've got left as a result of what it is that you give to the Kohen. That adds an extraordinary dimension. Because what makes this posuk unique and what makes this posuk different to all the other descriptions of things lasting a long time is that the people involved in this commitment are giving something to the Kohanim, but as a result of them giving something to the Kohanim, they are perhaps the greatest beneficiaries. They'll have a connection with Kedusha, they'll be inspired by what Emes Dikah Kedusha is, and not only that they've given away from what they have, and actually what is left is going to be multiplied and blessed as a result of it, and preserved. And with this fascinating insight, we can understand an Oznayim L'Torah from last week's Parsha. The Zman Torah in last week's parsha on the Inyan of Challah asked the following question. My accountant isn't here today, but everybody knows you've got to pay taxes. You've got to pay taxes. It's one of those everybody knows you've got to pay taxes. It's one of those realities. That's how it goes. But if you look at the way that taxation has worked, you'll notice something fascinating. Generally speaking, governments are going to be quicker to tax luxuries than they are quicker to tax the basics and the absolute things that which are needed by human beings. Why? Because since it's so important to people and then they need it, if we tax it, they won't be able to afford it. But the yacht in the Mediterranean, that they can have be well taxed upon, and therefore there'll be higher tax. But he points out the Oznaim of Torah something very strange about challah. Very, very strange. And that is that when a person has the obligation to take their crop and bring it into their granary, they've got an obligation to give trumas and maestras. Everybody has that obligation to give away your percentage, 2% to the kohen, 10% to the levi, etc., etc. So, Baruch Hashem, I fulfill my obligation, I've given my tax. Ask the Oznaim Torah, but there is an exception. And the exception is challah. Challah is that even though I've already paid tax, when it comes to making bread, I've got to pay tax again. I've got to give, when it becomes a dough, I've got to give again a percentage to the kohen. He says, this is extraordinary. Of all the most important subsistence food, bread is it, and governments usually won't charge any tax, and in fact, the opposite, they'll subsidize bread in order to make it easy for everybody. But what's going on with challah? Challah, you're double taxing the most important food. Why are you doing such a thing? That's his kasha. The Oznaim Torah gives a fascinating answer. And he says as follows, because you've got to understand that when we're giving away trumas and maisa, and when we're paying our tax, we have a completely different approach to the way of the non-Jewish world. Their idea is, look, it's an unfortunate thing, I've got to pay tax, what can I do? It's an unfortunate necessity. We have a completely different thing. So, maisa, your person gives maisa, bishvilshet is asher. You give away 10%, you give away 2%, you support a local moisad, you help a yeshiva, you know what you're going to get as a result of that? You're going to become wealthy, but if you do it mamishta with an opportunity to grow as a yid, you're going to become a wealthy individual. And he says, as a result, he says, because bread is so important, because it's such an essential food in our, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you need a bigger bracha on that bread, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to force you to give nachamul, again, another mice, another gift to the dafka by what? By the most important subsistence food. And he draws our attention to Pasuk and Yecheskel, as the Navi tells us, Voracious called Bechori Vekol, V'chol trumas kol mikol trumas rem l'karnim. It also tells us the obligation to give your bikurim and all the trumas to the karnim. And then the pasuk tells us in Yecheskel, V'reishis harisoschem, the first of your dough, titna l'karn, you've got to give to the karn, l'haniach bracha el beisech, in order you can have bracha on your home. You know what's going to give you the biggest bracha. You know what's going to preserve your family and the closeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know what's going to bring you that kedusha which we all desire? Give and share and ensure that the kohen is well looked after and all that the shalshei, all those who serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with this we can have a deeper understanding of what this posuk in this week's Seder is telling us. There's a unique and special bracha which is given to Aaron as the obligation to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be the dugma of what it is Hashem wants. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to connect with him. And this is l'chai kolam. But it's a bris melech kolam. It's a covenant of salt, where the people who are going to give are going to be preserved as a result of it. Have a good day. Thank you.